I mean, all of us went to school, right? I'm assuming myself as well. It's like if you've sat through since after lunch, ISAC, you probably will be tuning out when you get a bit of background on ISAC, right? So it's almost like when you're almost there, you've heard the topic over and over again from your professor, and then it's time for finals, and you kind of need like a refresher before the quiz or the final. So you can treat my first three slides as kind of the Cliff Notes version of ISAC, so you're prepared for the final. Okay. And then we'll jump to stuff that, we as a test and measurement company care about, which hopefully you do as well. So what is ISAC? Let's start off with what it is. It's obviously integrated sensing communications, one waveform, one antenna, two functions, right? So I think we've heard a lot about it. Cliff Notes version is you use a 5G base station, quote unquote, also 6G. You sense and communicate using a shared spectrum. The key here is there's no separate hardware. That's the only time it becomes really valuable. Otherwise, you might as well put the real hardware there. Same RF front end network becomes a distributed sensor fabric. That's the value, right? You can detect, you can localize, you can track, UAVs, vehicles, humans, right? So why now? Obviously, it's a hot topic right now. We hear a lot about it. 3GPP study item is active. There's a sensing SID approved. In fact, there's already some that are deployed. So we really need to understand how to do this right, how to do this more scalable, so it's useful worldwide. What are the priority use cases? So I've kind of grouped them into kind of three main areas, right? So aerial and counter UAV, we heard a lot about that. Drones, ground and automotive, right? Being able to sense kind of going downwards. Digital twin construction is one kind of interesting area. And defense and security, right? And the ability to use sensor fusion. So there are six 3GPP approved sensing modes. Make sure you remember every single one of them later in our quiz. Okay. The roadmap, we've already saw a lot about it, so I'm not going to go into too much detail. Maybe one thing that has not been covered is, there's already quite active discussion in RAN4. RAN4 and 3GP, as you know, it's really about RF performance. So basically, some of the key agreements here are there's really two priority use cases that's prioritized by RAN4. This kind of shows you where industry is putting a lot of its attention. TRP monostatic for UAV, and TRP UE bistatic for vehicle. So if at least that was interesting to me when I kind of saw that, it tells me what is really, let's call it the priority, at least for the standards body. And at the end of the day, the key KPIs, right? Positioning accuracy, velocity accuracy, miss detection probability, false alarm probability. These are things that you don't typically see in a 3GPP spec today. But these are things that will be showing up in a RAN4 performance requirement very soon. So things that we need to be really paying attention to. So that's it from a Cliff Notes version of ISAC. Being a testing company, we focus on what are the challenges that we see. So we already heard quite a bit about it, right? But I've kind of binned it into three key areas, right? The first area is the signal integrity itself, right? So we as a community has been doing comms for decades. We've started talking about full duplex actually a couple years back, right? There was kind of a research topic mostly around being able to do uplink and downlink at the same time. Now there's sub-band full duplex. It's more about, again, more spectral efficiency. But now this self-interference for radar, that's almost like a non-starter, right? Any sort of self-interference will destroy your sensing capability. So now it has transitioned into really a necessity rather than an optimization. So I think that's one key thing. Obviously, the clutter is a big area that is very difficult to detect, and in fact, also very difficult to model. A lot of our tools out there, you probably know, there's, of course, test equipment for radar. They're out there, target simulators. There's also test equipment for comms, which is channel emulators, right? So now these two things needs to come together. And that's really the challenge that we're seeing is like, okay, these two metrics needs to be done simultaneously to really understand the trade-off between comms and sensing. Because again, you know, if you take out some symbols, let's say, for sensing, you're going to take out spectral efficiency. So what are the right trade-offs between sensing and comms? And then finally, you know, there's a lot of talk, of course, of reusing the OFDM waveform, right? There's also others that think that maybe we need a different waveform. As you know, high PAPR is actually not great for comms, it's even more critical for sensing. That's why chirp waveform was very popular for radar, right? Because it allows you, you know, it's continuous wave waveform, really good for PAPR. That means you can transmit a very high power signal and then be able to do range detection much more efficiently. So these are kind of the key trade-offs that are being discussed right now. And of course, putting on hardware, right? We heard Steve Papa talk a lot about synchronization. That is really key, especially if you're doing multi-static, right? The hardware aspects of it, you know, now you need to not just have to worry about energy efficiency, which we heard about, throughput, latency coverage, and now you're going to need to talk about probability of false detection, probability of false alarm, misdetection, false alarm, you know, more sensing KPIs. Now, how do you trade these off? These are not, you know, you can't just do all of them simultaneously, right? So we talked about distributed bistatic nodes, multistatic nodes needing precise clock synchronization. And then, you know, doing the sensing at the edge, right? So now we need the IQ data, right? We heard a little bit about, you know, concept of dApps, being able to open that up. But even for, you know, traditional, you know, base stations, you know, do we have the processing capacity at the edge to do the sensing and AI, right, that we might want to leverage to really do that well. And then on the testing side, you know, standards coverage, right? I think that's still starting. We have to test all these six sensing modes. Obviously, when you move to multi-static, those test beds can get really, really expensive. And then, you know, sensing and comms KPIs must be co-validated. So kind of ranked it a little bit in terms of, at least, you know, this is my personal opinion on the difficulty of the different areas. I mean, one can argue on these, but really the self-interference is a big issue. We see that as a very difficult engineering problem. I think it can be solved, but it's something that we need to pay attention to. And, you know, synchronization. And I mean, the last one, I think, is clutter modeling. It's well understood, actually, in the radar world, but doing this cost effectively in a large scale in a comms infrastructure is kind of what's challenging about that. Okay. So what is our approach? So our approach today is a unified emulation platform. And our customers that we're working with have been pushing us to really focus on not just the sensing problem, but really the joint communications and sensing problem. So what we have today is actually we had to bring together a lot of our different technologies within our company to come up with what we're calling a site-specific digital twin for ISAC. So we see this as a unified emulation platform. Like, first of all, we at Viavi, we actually, you know, worked on our own ray tracer that is actually optimized for ISAC. So when we started evaluating different ray tracing solutions, you know, we could have easily used, you know, what's out there, but none of them are really tuned for the ISAC problem, right? You have ray tracers that are really good for coverage mapping, like, you know, operators use them for planning. And there are some ray tracers that are really good for the radar problem, right? And automotive radar companies use them. But putting them together, right, in the right mix of the, you know, the balance of KPIs is actually not an easy problem. So we actually came up with our own ray tracer. We created a compression algorithm to take the rays that are emulated, you know, for example, with a drone flying around the building here, to then run it on a real-time channel emulator. And so that's kind of key to our ISAC solution, is a high-fidelity ray tracer that can emulate drones, up to 5 drones today, and then running it in real time on a test bed, right? And so if you have a base station under test, you can go through our channel emulator. But at the same time, right, integrating that with a UE emulation capability. Again, because it's all about combining the sensing and communications together. I think that's the hard problem that we're trying to solve. And of course, you know, the validation of the ray tracer using the field measurements to make sure that it's actually calibrated. Again, Viavi has a suite of field instrumentation that we've actually used with several customers to make sure that the modeling of the ray tracing is actually accurate according to the site, and then bringing it back into the lab for a full digital twin solution. So that's what we've worked on. This is actually a demo from MWC. This was not this MWC, but the MWC last year. So about 18 months ago. And I'm not sure if I could, can that be clicked? Is this a PDF or PowerPoint? We're out of time. I don't think you're all itching to watch a video. So just go online. It's on YouTube, right? And you can just watch it on your own. But, basically you can see a drone flying and us emulating it. So there you go. That's the Cliff Notes version of the video. Okay. All right. With that, I give the floor back to Ganesh. I don't know if there are any questions. Yeah. Jan? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we talk about it a bit, about the digital twin, kind of what we are doing. I was thinking how, because we're also looking at the large scale kind of coverage for the digital twin, how would you approach that? Or like the tool that you're developing, the development roadmap, maybe, do you see it realistic? Or what would you kind of maybe like give me an advice in a way?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So actually at Viavi, what I showed here is what we call our site-specific digital twin. It's usually for, again, at the site level, up to maybe several cells, but high fidelity. And then we usually run those with a high fidelity channel emulator. So, and that's, you know, what we see as necessary for ISAC, right? Really, you know, tuning the algorithms and so on. We also have another digital twin, which we call City Scale Digital Twin. It's our AI RAN scenario generator. And there, it's mostly for today. A lot of companies use that to train RApps and XApps, and you know, because it's kind of emulates, you know, a city scale network. We have some requests to use that for ISAC. That's on our roadmap right now. But yeah, that's a much harder problem. the site scale, the solution is much more tractable. Yeah, thanks.
I had a quick question. A lot of the value of this is the data that comes along with the ray tracing to build AI ML models. How do you capture that data? How do you like share it and make it more open and to so people can build their own AI ML models based on this emulator?
That's a great question. So the easy answer here would be, why don't you buy the equipment and generate the data by yourself? But, you know, so actually one of the things I didn't talk about is one of the initiatives we have at Viavi is, again, sorry to Dr. E, but it's in the AI RAN Alliance. I know I'm going to be kicked out here, but there's this initiative called Data for AI. And we actually have a lab in Arizona called Valor. And that's actually a place we've had requests like yours from some partners to actually generate data and make it widely available. So we'd love to hear more feedback on the scenarios. But that is actually our plan. And that gentleman right there, his name is Howard Thomas. He's actually leading the Data for AI initiative for us in the AI RAN Alliance. But you know, we love ORAN a lot more than the AI RAN Alliance. It's where we started. AI RAN is not possible without ORAN, right? It's foundational.
I think as we discussed before, we're looking forward, we are able to bring that data to AI RAN Alliance.
Yes. I mean, you know,
to ORAN Alliance.
ORAN, right?
ORAN. What? See my mind. Sorry, Dr. Yi. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Valor is a lab. It's actually funded by the NTIA. You know what it stands for? It's Viavi Automated Lab as a Service for Open RAN. it's not Valar, right? It's Valor. So, so.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
The commitment.
No, no. I mean, at the end of the day, we. I mean, I don't want to get into too much of the politics here, but you know, as you know, we are not an OTIC, right? Valor is not an OTIC because we're a vendor, considered a vendor. So we are not an official OTIC, but we support all the OTICs. So things that are needed by any ecosystem member in ORAN is actually welcome to use Valor, and it's actually funded by the US government, right? So as long as you know, and it's you know, as of today, right, that's our service that we offer to the ecosystem. So